Eric Green from The Athletic in Toronto joins us once again. Eric, how are you?
Well, now that I've been introduced with some Drake, I'm great. Thanks for asking.
Hey, that's DJ Maj, man. He knows. He knows what to play. Now, let's be honest. The Philadelphia 76ers are not the Philadelphia 76ers of previous years. They're a much more competitive team. They're still not a dominant team. But you look at last night's game, and was it a case of them just missing shots? Is that ultimately what cost them? Or what do you think about the Raptors' defense here the last few games?
I didn't think, generally when the Raptors have lost, the defense has been the problem, and that wasn't necessarily the case last night. They had a bad shooting night. They shot 65% from the free throw line. They shot, I believe, 25% from three-point range, and it's just hard to win a game on a back-to-back like that, especially when Joel Embiid is playing how Joel Embiid is playing. I think people have to look at the Sixers as two different teams. There's the team without Embiid on the floor, which is bad, and the team with Embiid on the floor, which is, I'd say, average, like a fine team. So it's, a loss that you look at on the schedule and say, well, they should have found a way to win that, and a relatively normal number of shots fall, they do find a way to win that. But I don't think, the Sixers have won seven of nine. There's not any tremendous shame, especially given the injuries that seem to be befalling the Raptors' front court and losing to the Sixers these days.
Now, a few brutal tumbles last night for guys. Oh, yeah. Any update on the status?
Well, I'm not with the team on the road. They play in Charlotte tomorrow on Friday. But Lucas Negreira had a concussion from Tuesday's game, so that will be slow, I assume. You have to be cautious with that. Considering how long Damari Carroll was on the floor with what was later determined a sore neck, who knows about that? Jonas Valanciunas, it was amazing he got right back into the game after he smacked the back of his head on the floor. And Patrick Patterson's strained knee has been termed day-to-day since it started. So, you expect Valanciunas to play and you expect to be able to get the 15 minutes from Jared Sollinger, who made his debut on Wednesday night, if you're hoping for any more, I don't know, it seems dicey. There's nobody who's, none of those injuries seem like they're definitely on the coming to an end.
We're joined by Eric Kareen from The Athletic talking about the Raptors. You can follow Eric on Twitter at @ekareen. And Eric, you mentioned Jared Sollinger last night, made his Raptor debut in a very small window, just 13 minutes. But what did you make of his debut last night?
I thought it was pretty impressive. And because of those injuries, because of a lack of Patterson, he wasn't sort of – the Raptors went into the season envisioning him as a starting power forward next to Valanciunas. Instead, he was a small ball center without Negreira or Patterson available. And he just is a smart offensive player. He knows how to find soft spots in the defense. I think – the more Kyle Lowry plays with him, he probably won't throw him an alley-oop pass like he did last night. That's not really in Sollinger's wheelhouse. And there are some times where he's going to be exposed a little bit on defense, but his intelligence can make up for that in the right circumstance. So, one game, I think it was 13 or 15 minutes. I can't remember exactly what the number was. But, when these other players do start to come back, particularly Patterson, who is the biggest of the losses right now in terms of what the Raptors do on both ends of the floor. I think you'll see Sollinger give them productive minutes where they were just trying to get by through experimentation beforehand, whether it was Pascal Siakam starting the first 34 games of the year or going to a lot of small lineups, even when the other team is big, as they sort of had to do recently.
Are the Raptors still the best team in the Atlantic Division, or has Boston kind of narrowed that gap, in your opinion?
Well, I think Boston's right there. Like, we've seen the two games between the teams this year, and the Raptors have won them both, but they sort of both been games that could have gone either way. Boston was certainly in control of the most recent one in Toronto, but Boston also lost to the Knicks on Wednesday night, which at this point is more embarrassing than losing to the Sixers, I think. I'd say I went into the year sort of thinking it was a coin flip between them. Certainly given the way the Raptors front court is beat up right now, I would lean toward the Celtics. Overall, I would probably, assuming the Raptors have home court, I would lean toward the Raptors in a seven-game series. But if they had to play tomorrow, again, I would probably say Boston would have the better chance. But coming into the season, like, I don't think many people thought there was a huge gap between these teams. Al Horford's a really good player. Isaiah Thomas is having a tremendous offensive season. And just the sheer number of young, active defenders they can sic on Lowry and DeRozan is it could be daunting in a seven-game series. I mean, I think that's a seven-game series that a lot of basketball fans, even if Raptors fans might be, you know, a bit hesitant about seeing it, a lot of basketball fans would be really excited to see how the teams and the coaches would match up.
Eric Green from The Athletic in Toronto joined us talking Raptors and the NBA. Eric, you've covered the NBA for a long time. I've never seen a player come close to averaging a triple-double, and that's what Russell Westbrook is doing right now. And I know that his team doesn't have the best record, and you look in the NBA, if you don't have two or three stud starters, it's really tough to be competitive. But what do you make of Westbrook's play this year? What's been the most impressive for you?
The most impressive thing about Westbrook is the same thing that's always been the most impressive thing about Westbrook. It's just how he doesn't stop. Like, the guy is relentless, and he pushes himself at such a rate that it's hard to believe that can be sustainable, but it doesn't look like he's slowing down. And with all that said, he might not even be the MVP at the halfway point, given what James Harden is doing in Houston. It's really amazing, and it sort of is a mini version. He doesn't have the court vision that LeBron James does, but it's sort of a mini version of just that physical dominance and that physical relentlessness that you could see from James when he was at the absolute height of his powers. Now James sort of has to play the long game a little bit to make sure, and let's not get it twisted, I still think, you know, no matter who wins the MVP, I still think LeBron James is the best player in the league. But the way that Westbrook can just power through a half a season without any seeming signs of wear or tear, like, that's unbelievable to me.
It's amazing to watch what he does every night. And for me this year, well, James might be the best player. I don't doubt that. This season, I think Westbrook so far has been the best player. Now, easily maybe the best sideshow is going on in the Knicks. What do you make of Phil Jackson, Carmelo Anthony? Well, why is that not working? And Phil Jackson, do you think he's just not as maybe as invested as he was before, and that's not why he's having the success? Or is it because he doesn't have the players he had when he was a coach?
Well, it's not working because they don't have a coherent plan. Like, what you get this guy, Kristaps Porzingis, who is so obviously the future of your team, and then you go out and acquire Joakim Noah and Derrick Rose in a trade, like, or in free agency, in Noah's case, like, what was the intent going into the season? I can see, you know, Carmelo's there, and if you believe him, which I do, he wants to be there. He wants to be a Knick. He considers his home. And you can make that transition from Anthony to Porzingis rather seamlessly, I think. But what is with the reliance on the veterans that they just didn't need to go after in this case? Like, why isn't this team looking to sell off and get more young pieces that are going to fit around Porzingis's timeline? It's just not a cohesive vision. And, you know, with all the noise about the triangle offense, you know, his handpicked assistant coach, Kurt Rambis, you know, can't put together a decent defense. So he certainly doesn't have the players, and it's on the players, but that's on him. Like, they made some offseason choices they didn't need to make. As far as Carmelo is concerned, he has a no-trade clause. The Knicks gave it to him, and they're going to have to live with whatever he wants to do. I mean, if I were Melo, like, I could see the appeal in going somewhere that's, you know, functional and can give you a better shot to win, but he gets to do what he wants when he negotiates that in free agency, you know? So anybody mad at Carmelo is sort of missing the point here. I think this is the Knicks continue to do very Knicksy things, no matter who's in charge.
Joined by Eric Kareen from The Athletic, talking all things NBA. You mentioned Kristaps Porzingis with the Knicks, Eric. There's a lot of good unicorns in the NBA right now. There's Giannis, Antetokounmpo with the Bucks. We have Anthony Davis. Who is your favorite unicorn right now to watch in the NBA?
It's funny. The term unicorn, like, it's just, it seems like they're so special that they should all get different names. They shouldn't all be unicorns, you know? But I get what your question is. And I think this season it has to be Giannis. Like, there's a different clip from him every night, taking off from, you know, making his last dribble before the three-point line to and dunk off two steps. His vision is just unbelievable. The way he's pairing with Jabari Parker is working seamlessly after some years of growth there. Just the way he's grown into what, you know, the very peak of what you hoped he could be on very little information when they drafted him, because he among all these guys, he was the biggest mystery coming into the league. And to see him bloom fully here, and it's been really excellent to watch. And if he ever gets a jumper, you know, it's pretty much over. I can tell you that there are a lot of Eastern Conference teams that will want to avoid the Bucks in the first round the way he's playing, because that's a guy that can steal a few games on his own, and you can just put on whatever player you want to stop at any given moment, and he can give them a lot of trouble.
Eric, as always, we appreciate it. It's been an interesting time in the NBA. I love the unicorn talk, by the way. Who doesn't like unicorn talk? So we'll have to continue that next Thursday as well. We appreciate your time.
Thank you, guys. Thank you. Have a good one.